This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Matt Goldman.
And I'm Michael Sacca. Today we talked to Florian Dorfbauer of Usersnap. And Matt, what'd you think?
It was really great to hear about how they are doing growth experiments there and trying to build up processes as they grow their team. They're trying to be really methodical and operating on a weekly basis, working together to try different ideas that are maybe unconventional that they wouldn't normally try. And then if they work out, then it becomes part of their playbook. And it's a really good process.
Yeah. And it seems to be working as they grow and kind of helping them with growth and to organize their team. So let's get into it.
Wistia is a video hosting platform built specifically for business. If you're using video as a part of your marketing strategy, you need to be able to measure its impact. Wistia is helping over 175,000 businesses do just that with premium video hosting, lead generation tools, and in-depth video analytics. For more about Wistia, visit wistia.com/rocketship.
So tell us a bit about Usersnap.
Yes, Usersnap. What is Usersnap? Usersnap is basically a communication tool, a visual communication tool for people working on a web project. And we figured that, well, communication is key in so many senses, but if you're working on a web project, it's super key that you communicate very clearly. And why is it important? I think there are few teams and few situations in the world where people need to work with each other having so much of a different background. Just imagine there are designers and there are developers, and sometimes you need to deal with a customer and then they are UX guys, and they all have a different background. And in a sense, they need to communicate what they want to change, what they want to improve. And we, as a starting team, we've been in exact this situation when we worked as an agency for big clients from the telco industry. And we figured that we never got bug reports we understood, because the regular bug report we received was like, doesn't work well. Okay. And then we had to collect all the context information we needed. And that was the nucleus where we started with UserSnap. And today UserSnap is one of the simplest tools you can imagine. It's basically a button sitting inside your browser. And whenever you want to share a feedback or report a bug, you click the button, you get the three or four most simplest tools you can think of, like a highlighting tool, a virtual sticky note, a pen tool, and you can annotate what you see. After that, you hit send, and the developer or the person in charge of the problem will get a screenshot out of your browser. And not only he or she will get a screenshot, but also a couple of meta information like the browser dimension, the operating system, stuff like that.
So is this something that you put in like your website? And so it's that Java, it's a little snippet, you put it in your website, and then you can, your visitors have the ability to send you the feedback?
Exactly, yep. Exactly. So they don't need to install anything. It's not a browser add-on. It comes along with the website itself. It's like installing Google Analytics if you want to compare it this way. And of course, we do have browser extensions for other purposes. But in the most general cases, you install UserSnap in your website and off you go. You have
very cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you guys were running an agency. Did you stop the agency and then switch over to UserSnap
So that's what we did. Yes. It started as a side project, and it turned out that people are loving it, and we saw the opportunity, and quickly found a seed investor and stopped the agency, and now focusing full time on UserSnap.
Very cool. So, how big is your team now?
At the moment, we're 8 people on 3 different locations, and we're growing very, very quickly. The problem is a little bit the hiring process, and that's what we will talk about a little bit later, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to hear how, what kind of, I guess, issues first that you guys have hit as you grow, that led you to realize that we need processes if we're actually going to make this thing work.
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, you're just a founding team. You're 3. We started as a team of 3, and we grew quite quickly, got some seed funding. And I think starting with employee number 6, you need to have some some minor processes, but it's not that crucial at this size. But if you realize that your goal are somehow growing up to 20, 30 people in the near term, you need to think about the processes upfront. And, well, I think we realized this half a year ago and then decided on what processes to focus, because you don't want to have a lot of overhead when you're still small. And that's when we came up with the question, what's the most important thing we need to do now? And it's growth. And then that was the main headline, and it still is. So we said, well, let's build a growth process. And basically we typed into Google how to set up growth process.
Was there any results?
Yeah. No, it was, that was not 100% true. Yes, we got a couple of hits. Of course, Google knows everything. Now, the truth is... It's a question of your mindset. So you can set up engineering processes, you can set up marketing processes and stuff like that. And in the end, what is a startup? A startup is something which needs to grow fast. And so everything else, yeah, you can name it marketing, but in the end, if it's not contributing to growth and only stabilizing something which is already there, it's not part of what we are going to focus. So anyways, the question was there some useful result? Yes, there was a useful result. I found a blog post on Medium from a guy claiming that he's doing growth experiments at SoundCloud, but he's never worked at SoundCloud. So basically, it was a theory of how to set up a growth process.
Okay.
The simplest growth process you can think of, and we implemented this growth process. It's quite simple. And it goes like this. We have a backlog of growth ideas. Everybody in the team is invited to contribute to the backlog, and everybody in the team needs to, well, somehow have an hypothesis why an idea needs to be implemented. And then we decide on the ideas, and then we do the ideas. And that's it. And after our experiments end, we collect the results, and if an experiment works, it will be, well, somehow used in a playbook where we refine the idea. Right now we are, for example, I'll give you one example. This can be as small as let's change the pricing page on our website to as big as let's try outbound sales in a vertical we've never been into or something like that. Mm. And experiments are all pretty short, so 3 to 4 weeks. And everybody's responsible for their own experiments. And I think this thing has a limit when we're reaching maybe 20 people. But right now, that's exactly what we need.
So how are you organizing these processes, and who's setting the goals on them?
The goals are, well, each idea needs to have an hypothesis. Mm-hmm. So give you an example. And the example reads like, if we change a very dumb example, if we change the color of the checkout button from blue to red, I think we will make 20% more revenue this month because people love red. This would be the hypothesis. Of course, nope, yeah, this is a dumb example. Anyway,
we get it though. It makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. It makes sense. So I need to convince you, for example, if you were on my team. And you would say, hey, Florian, nah, don't believe in you. And so I think this would be the main filter. But if the idea sounds great or something like that, we decide together, let's make it. And then there's a micro assessment if we can afford this experiment in terms of do we have enough resources to do it? And yeah.
So once you've done an experiment or it's in process, we're in progress, what's the next step? How does it become part of the playbook, as you say?
Yeah, we test if the hypothesis hold. So if we measure everything, and if the needle doesn't move in the right direction, the experiment has failed. That's not a problem. We discuss it. We say nobody gets blamed for having an idea for an experiment which failed. Doesn't matter, because that's how it works. And yeah, we move on. If it doesn't fail, so if it's a success, we try to understand why it really was a success and refine the experiment, put it to a playbook, and share it with each other and try to make out of this idea a recurring process. One example, I'm reaching out to every new customer we gain. Personally, there was an idea. The hypothesis is that the retention rate of our customers will be longer and better if I reach out personally after the sign-up. It happened, and now this is a daily routine for me personally.
So where are you guys tracking these? Are there any tools that you're using that are kind of helping you guys stay on the same page?
I would love to tell you now we have the most complex tool chain ever. In the end, it's Excel, right?
Okay.
it's super simple, and sometimes it's Google Docs. But I mean, the main tracking sheet is Excel, because we're doing a lot of analysis within this Excel sheet. But it's maybe three Excel sheets and a couple of Google Docs. It's super simple, and frankly, it's not because we can't afford any elaborate tools. I believe that you really need to focus on the content of the ideas and not on the tool chain. Mm-hmm. So, well, that's hands on what we're doing here.
Yeah, no, and that's cool. I mean, at Crew, we're using Trello. And you know, it's a free tool, but it works beautifully for kind of similar processes.
Frankly, that's not completely true. I mean, we, of course, we use Blossom, for example, to manage larger projects within our growth process. Blossom is, I believe, the most beautiful project management tool out there. And it's quite simple, beautiful, and I really love it and can recommend it. I also love Trello, of course, but we decided to go with Blossom.
No, very cool, yeah. Yeah, we spoke with them a little while ago, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a beautiful tool. Yeah, so what's been the biggest challenge for you guys growing from 3 to 8? And trying to, you know, implement new processes like this and new kind of ways of working together.
From 3 to 8, we had to learn how to hire the best people. I mean, that's something you don't think about when you start a company. Mm. And the agency was a little bit smaller. We had a couple of people, but it's a different process hiring, like for an agency, hiring developers for an agency, as compared to hiring people for a company where you build a product.
Yeah.
And that was a big learning. So with all those hiring skills we had already, and this was like 5 years, we thought we're well equipped with the skill set we need to grow the company. And, well, it's completely different. That was a big challenge to understand whom we need to ask to work with us.
Mm.
Yep.
So, what's been the biggest creator of growth for you guys? What's been the best growth channel that you've discovered through this process?
Yeah, right now it's in general it's inbound marketing. Still inbound marketing, and what we're doing is writing a lot of blog posts. We're not only on our blog, but on other blog posts, on other blogs. Of course, educating about the workflow we are thinking of, and sometimes being a little bit theoretical as well, how we perceive the world. But it's inbound. We're using email a lot. We love to send emails. We sometimes sending emails a little bit too often, but that's how it goes. Email is a great channel. Also inbound, basically.
Yeah, so inbound is the one. Yeah, we hear that over inbound and over again. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And well, I have a little bit of a background, of a math background. The math doesn't work out if your product is not more expensive than a certain threshold. It doesn't make sense to make outbound sales at all, as it doesn't pay off. I mean, we're happily in a situation where the more expensive products we're selling are they allow us to do a little bit of outbound, and we do this right now. But inbound for software as a service companies, for software as a service products, is the way to do it, as everything else wouldn't pay off the cost of customer acquisition.
Yeah. So what is that threshold that you found that you guys are using as a baseline for whether to do outbound or inbound sales?
Yeah, that depends on so many different variables, like how much is your sales guy, how effective, or what conversion rate do you expect from your sales process, that I think you can't tell in general. But if you want to have a number, I would say any product which doesn't generate at least, or any customer which doesn't generate $10,000 in a year, it's not worth to do outbound sales, unless you're. I mean, there are a lot of ifs now, but
sure.
10K will be something where I say, well, let's give it a try and try to increase the value of the customer, something like that. Below 10K, I think that's a little bit problematic to do.
So, how did you start off the sales team there?
Yeah, that's a recent process. So that's the idea is that. And that's what we've learned from the last 12 months. The idea is that two of the three co-founders need to understand everything before we can scale the sales process. And that's what my day-to-day job is at the moment, doing sales together with Joseph, one of my co-founder, and trying everything which comes to our mind to be more efficient. And it's also embedded in the growth process because it's our headline, our mantra. And we're trying a lot of things at the moment with outbound sales. Different verticals, different approaches, trying a lot down to changing email copy, calling people, cold calling people, cold emailing people. That's what we're doing. And so the time frame for each iteration is about a week. Then we sit together, exchange thoughts, how we can make it better. And I'm very, very, very happy that we have this process of the growth process and the mindset now, because if you just try something and understand and believe that everything's going to be better within one iteration, you will end up very frustrated. And so in a sense, a process is also something which can help you over some problems you will find.
Yeah, it sounds like you have a whole growth process within sales itself that's kind of separate from the marketing and inbound stuff.
Yeah, but only because we're just starting it off, and it will be embedded very soon.
Is a week enough time to really see if your approach is working before changing it?
Yes. If you have a look at the micro changes, yes. Like if you have 2,000 leads and sending them an email and the open rate is 40%, and Joseph is doing exactly the same with the same cohort of people, and he used a different copy and his open rate is 20%, the answer is he really needs to change the copy. Something like, so on this level, I think a week is enough because you can send a lot of emails in a week. For general questions, I think a week is not enough. Like if you want to have an answer if a specific vertical is a good customer for you or has a lot of customers for you, you need to dig deeper because you need to understand the vertical. You need to understand how the decision processes work there. And right now, I think we have a couple of verticals which are well understood with the founding team, and a couple of verticals which are, which we would love to be in, but we're not in there yet. So I agree, this will take a little bit longer than a week.
So when you're setting up those longer processes, do you have kind of the end goal and then smaller processes to work up to a conclusion for, say, something like a market?
Yeah. Once such an idea is kicked off within our growth process, it's not actively managed by more than two people. So this daily process from the decision that we're doing, it is managed within Slack, and so that's one-on-one communication, and we're very fast. The only thing which is in terms of how do we manage all those stuff is the weekly growth meeting, which replaced everything else we had before. And at this place, it's an all-hands meeting. We're together and discuss the results each of us had. And also if something failed, and we're collecting new ideas. So that's the weekly point where we steer the new ideas, where we steer what the processes everybody's involved in.
How do you kind of keep blame out of the equation when you're doing these? How have you guys managed to kind of heat off those heated conversations?
Yeah. Yeah. Investing in culture.
I would say.
I mean, it sounds easy, but in the end it is. In the end, I mean, I repeatedly tell everybody on the team that no one's to blame for a failed experiment. And in a sense, I think as we decided, I mean, there's no democracy in the decisions. It's not like we're tree huggers and stuff like that. But everybody knows, well, there's an idea, and if the idea is good, everybody tells each other. We are very, very open with feedback, very direct. So we're Austrians.
Okay.
It can be hard for some, but like If we don't believe that an idea is good, we say this idea is maybe not good. And maybe we even skip the word maybe.
Okay.
So that's a very direct thing. But that's how we also – that's linked with the hiring process. I mean, we really are looking for people who can stand this kind of feedback. It's direct, yes.
Okay, yeah. And I guess it needs to be at times.
Yeah, and very, very little fluff. I mean, and it's not a personal thing. So getting back to this idea with the red and blue button, the answer in our growth meeting, if I would suggest this thing, would be this idea is a bad idea. Nobody looks at the color. There are even blog posts telling you that the color is not that relevant. Mm-hmm. So, and this, yeah, okay, let's keep it.
But if someone's very passionate, then you allow them to kind of run with it.
If there's proof enough that the effort is worth it, otherwise I would say no.
Okay.
So it's on them to really convince the team and get people excited about the direction.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a selling process somehow. I mean, nobody's happy to, like I said, everybody's responsible for their own suggestions. But in the end, so if I want to change something on the web, I need the team to act on it, right? So I need to call Thomas, asking him for copy, and I want him to be passionate about it. But if he doesn't believe in the idea in the first place, it's my job to convince him. Right. And yeah.
And it really comes back to sales. Everything comes.
Yeah, to exactly. Sales. Yeah. Yeah, and hiring the right people. I mean, we understood that there are people around who are not happy with such a process. They want different processes. That's a neutral observation. It's not everybody. It's not everyone's piece of cake what we're doing, and yeah. But at the moment, I'm absolutely convinced that the team we have is the best team in the world. And we're direct. We're friendly with each other. We respect each other. But we also, everybody tells each other what he or she thinks about stuff.
Right.
And that's good.
Yes, it's important to communicate. Yeah. Honestly, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, so that it's very cool, and it allows for you guys to experiment without without the necessary, like, I guess, the risk of tanking the company or being blamed for something. It's all experiments, and they're all small, and they're all leading to something bigger.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so I completely, let's redesign the whole web page and everything's going to be better. That's not a part of the growth process we're working on at the moment, mm-hmm. as this would be too big of a risk and too much resources. Maybe the idea would be even good, but that's out of the scope of the current process.
Right.
Small steps. That's very, very important thing. Small steps and high frequency, small steps process.
Very cool. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing this with us. Where can we keep up with you and UserSnap online?
We are on Twitter and we're on Facebook and we're on LinkedIn, and we send out, as said, a couple of emails a week. So you can sign up for a newsletter on our blog.
What's in the emails? What kind of what's the benefit of us signing up?
Sign up for a newsletter and you will learn a lot of workflow processes when it comes to web development, when it comes to web design, how we believe the world will be in a couple of years. That's one of my pet projects because, yeah, just recently, I hope I can share this now. Are we over time already?
It's okay. Yeah,
so one thing which I believe will happen in the future is what's happening all the time is that you have workflows and then people decide to create new tools. And over time, the tools change the workflow. And this observation is not from me. That's from Benedict Evans. He's with Andreessen Horowitz. And mm-hmm. he wrote a nice post recently called Office Messaging and Verbs. And basically, he was talking about, like, a couple of years ago, you wrote a memo, and then you wrote emails attaching a document, a Word document, to an email, right, where the stuff you want to communicate is in the attached document and stuff like that. So it's good fun to read. In the end, the workflow changes, and all of a sudden you end up with Slack, and you have now Slack and communicate with your team in a completely new way. We're not sending emails any longer within UserSnap. Everybody's on Slack, and that's exactly what we need. So we are talking about such things and such developments in the workflow area a lot, and I think UserSnap is also part of such a thinking. Because, well, a couple of years ago, you had release cycles in software, mm-hmm. which were like 1 or 2 years, or sometimes a little bit shorter, and now everything is continuous, right? So if you deploy 5 times a day, you need a different quality assurance process where UserSnap comes into place, because it's ad hoc. It's like you immediately communicate what you see in your browser, and that's also, I think we're following a bigger thing here. If you look at UserSnap from a 10,000 feet perspective, that's I try to push our product into something which will be the standard in a couple of years, and I hope we will reach this goal. Yeah,
very cool, very cool. Yeah, it's always good to be looking ahead. Well, it sounds very interesting. To subscribe, that's some excellent content. So, well, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll be keeping up with you online.
Thanks, Michael, for having me. Thanks, Matt.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And be sure to check out our app discount section, where we have discounts on products that we use every day, like Woo Themes, Wistia, Treehouse. Go to rocketship.fm/essentials and get your discounts today.
outfit.